So you have the technical knowledge to pass the advanced audit and assurance exam right now. I mean, you've done the reading, you know the standards.
Right, absolutely. You put the hours in.
Yeah, but then why are you about to walk into that hall and just, throw away 20% of your
It
marks?
happens every single sitting. It really
It
does.
does. So today we are doing a deep dive into the latest examiner's report, and we are just completely stripping away all the fluff.
Exactly. We're bypassing all the background case details to look strictly at student errors. Because your technical knowledge might be solid, but your exam technique could be actively sabotaging you right now.
Yeah, we're essentially acting as your elite tutors for this deep dive. Think of this as your high-energy, rapid-fire final briefing before the September exams.
Love that. Let's get right into it.
So let's start where the examiner always starts, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, this is where scripts immediately just hemorrhage marks materiality.
Oh, materiality.
Yeah,
Yes.
it's the absolute foundation of evaluating any audit. Yet the report shows candidates completely losing their situational awareness under time pressure.
They really do. They just panic.
Yeah, like they fail to scale their benchmark to the provided exhibits, or they just completely ignore explicit instructions, like when they're explicitly told to base materiality on revenue.
And, even when they do get the right benchmark, the math errors are wild. I mean, we see candidates constantly confusing thousands with millions.
Wait, really? At this advanced level, they're mixing up thousands and
Oh,
millions.
all the time. It's the time pressure, like you said. But honestly, the worst part isn't even the math. It's that even when candidates calculate the threshold correctly, they just abandon it.
What do you mean by abandon it?
Well, they calculate it, they write it at the top of page one, and then they literally never refer to it again for the rest of the exam.
Wow. Okay, so it's just a box-ticking exercise for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or they try to justify their chosen threshold by writing something like, well, the audit is high risk. And that is just a generic, hollow phrase. It earns absolutely zero credit from the examiner.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate here for a second, just thinking about exam psychology.
Sure, go ahead.
When you're sitting there and you've got maybe 3 minutes left on a question, isn't pasting in a boilerplate justification like it's high risk a smart defensive move? I mean, it feels like you're at least putting some points on the board.
I get that. I really do. It feels safe. But it is a complete illusion. The examiner needs to see that you actually understand the commercial reality of this specific client.
So the generic stuff just doesn't cut it.
Not at all. Top-tier candidates, the ones who actually pass, they don't just say it's high risk. They explicitly link the company's unique operational vulnerabilities to the threshold.
Like maybe mentioning a volatile supply chain or something.
Exactly. A volatile supply chain or, a recent aggressive acquisition. They explain exactly why those factors dictate that specific materiality threshold. And then, and this is the crucial part, they lock that threshold in and use it as a lens for every single risk evaluation that follows.
And I'm guessing that lack of analytical precision with materiality is exactly why their proposed solutions just completely fall apart in the next phase, right? When they have to evaluate lists.
Oh, 100%. The transition from materiality to risk evaluation is where things get really messy. We see candidates constantly like blurring the lines between business risk and the risk of material misstatement.
The ROEM, yeah, that's a classic trap.
It is. And to be absolutely clear on the boundary for anyone listening, business risk is the company losing money. ROEM is the company lying about losing money on the financial statements.
That is such a great way to put it, lying on the financials.
Yeah, and that distinction is crucial. The examiner notes that candidates will read a scenario, spot a relevant accounting standard, say ISS 37 for provisions, and then they just immediately jump to the conclusion. They'll just write, liabilities are understated.
Right. They completely skip the analytical steps required to actually prove that conclusion.
Exactly. They skip the how.
It's basically like a detective pointing at a suspect in court, but without presenting any of the forensic link.
Yes.
I mean, the examiner is the jury. You have to
Okay.
walk them through the evidence. You can't just stand there and shout guilty and expect to win the case.
That is a perfect analogy. To get the marks, you literally have to explain the mechanics. Take a pending legal case against the client.
Yep.
The event is the lawsuit itself. The criteria is that a financial payout is now probable.
Right, which triggers the standard.
Exactly. So IS 37 dictates that a provision must be recognized. Management hasn't recorded it. Therefore, liabilities are understated.
You have to actually connect the dots.
You do. If you skip those middle steps, you haven't demonstrated audit competence at all. You've just memorized a buzzword.
And I feel like that missing forensic link also explains this really bizarre trend the examiner highlighted.
Oh, which one?
Where candidates are reading an audit prompt and then suddenly suggesting the company entirely overhaul its inventory management system.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It's like when they don't understand the specific financial misstatement, they default to trying to fix the business itself.
I call that the consultant complex.
The consultant complex. I like that.
Because under pressure, candidates just forget they're sitting an audit exam. They start acting like management consultants.
Right.
But your job is not to fix the client's broken operational models. Your job is to assess how those broken models impact the numbers on the balance sheet.
Which brings us to the final hurdle, I think. Identifying the risk is one thing, but actually knowing the correct procedures to apply is the ultimate test.
It really is the ultimate test of competence.
And candidates are losing heavy, heavy marks by just regurgitating standard audit procedures. Like, they'll write, obtain a management representation, when the question specifically asks for a due diligence engagement.
Oh, that drives the examiners crazy. Due diligence requires a completely different investigative mindset than a statutory audit. You can't just copy-paste audit procedures.
No, you can't.
And we see this generic approach bleed into ethics questions, too. Candidates will name a threat, like self-interest, but they entirely fail to explain the mechanism of why it arises in this specific scenario.
Or worse, they waste precious time recommending ethical safeguards that the prompt already explicitly stated are in place.
Yes, they just aren't reading the scenario carefully enough.
You know, I see students default to writing, check the mathematical accuracy all the time for procedures.
Oh, all the time.
Because they're staring at the clock, they're panicking, and it just feels like a guaranteed safe mark to grab.
But it's actually a trap. It really is. Anyone can recount a column of numbers. The passing candidate designs targeted procedures that verify the underlying assumptions, you know.
Right, the actual substance.
Yeah, the technical feasibility, the commercial reality behind those numbers. You have to prove to the examiner that you understand exactly what you are verifying and why it matters to the audit.
Okay, so let's pull all of this together for a final checklist before you walk into that hall.
Let's do it.
Stop relying on vague boilerplate answers. Follow the precise instructions in the prompt. Show the step-by-step analytical link between an accounting standard and a misstatement.
Right.
And absolutely tailor your procedures to the specific engagement, whether that's an audit or due diligence.
That is the exact blueprint for passing. It really is.
Yeah.
But I want to leave you with this provocative thought to consider. When you read an examiner's report, are you just passively scrolling through a list of what other people did wrong? Or are you brave enough to recognize your own worst habits staring right back at you?
Ooh, that is a sobering thought before exam day. And I'll add one more thing to mull over. Do your actual study habits mirror these shortcuts? Like, are you just passively highlighting textbook definitions instead of actively practicing that forensic link we talked about?
Oh, that's a great point. How you study is how you test.
Exactly. Don't let your hard-earned technical knowledge get buried under generic answers. Recognize those blind spots now, adjust your technique, and you'll be the one walking out of that exam hall with a pass.